The John Daly Show, navigating your world.
And hi, everyone. We will take you through China through the eyes of someone who's just visited there. It is our good friend Dale Bellis from Liberty HealthShare. And we will get the skinny on Las Vegas with what is happening there with the NFL coming to town. What does that mean for you when you visit there? And United is bad as an airline, but it's not the only one. We also have a new book for you on how to shoot your vacation videos, and I think you know who the writers are. Plus, we have a great guacamole recipe. Joining me is my business partner, Susan Anzalone. She is in Las Vegas right now. I am coming to you from Sunset Beach, North Carolina myself. So, Susan, cheers, and what are you drinking?
Cheers. I am actually enjoying a glass of the Kirkland Sonoma County Chardonnay, which is Costco's own brand. For an
ironically,
everyday
so
sipping.
Am I.
Wow. Well, and you know, like we always say, and we did do a show on this, it's in Costco Whites, for an everyday sipping wine or a wine with food, we just love it. You know, it's a vibrant fruit, hint of oak, butter at the end, not too heavy, really good for sipping on a summer afternoon with a bite of cheese or salad or something like that.
And it's only about $6.99 a bottle.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, and like we talked about in the episode, the wines at Costco are high quality for their brand, their own brand, and they are made by great wineries exclusively for Costco. And in many cases, these wines are actually almost identical to the wines that are sold under the winery's original label. But because it's Costco, the prices are 50% or less than the branded price.
Yeah, so you're getting a great deal for great wine. And that show is actually up on our site. It's on nowtv.tikilive.com, and it's also on undercoverjetsetter.com. You'll actually see some remnants of that up there on the website. Okay, let's talk about us. Let's talk about the book.
Our favorite subject.
Absolutely. We have just finished a book. It is hot off the presses. It's just been published. And it is called The TV Studio in Your Palm. Is that what we called it?
No, it's The TV Studio in Your Hand. But
in your
close
hand.
Enough.
Okay.
Close enough, thesaurus-wise. So, I think it's the same thing.
So, and we are very proud of this and very excited about it. And this is something you can use before you go on vacation, while you're on vacation, so you can shoot your vacation videos correctly.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are very excited about it. It's been published now on Kindle as well as a paper book and a paperback book, I should say. And we're actually looking forward to doing an audio version too, coming in the future. But it's everything you kind of need to shoot, edit, deliver on your iPhone. And it's super easy. It's super simple. I mean, every time I turn around, people are just amazed at the picture quality that the iPhone camera uses. I mean, it's amazing, you know, and they're just blown away. And I'm just saying to them, this is what we're always talking about.
Yeah, and I had a funny incident the other night. We had a couple over for dinner, and the guy was showing me all this video he shot off his iPhone. And I go, wow, I said, this is fabulous. What a great idea. He goes, well, you told me what to do. And I go, I did. He goes, yeah. He says, you told me, do it in landscape. Don't move. Don't move. Don't move. And his video was fabulous. It was of this great resort area up in the mountains in North Carolina. So there was mountains and rivers. And it was brilliant video. He did a great job of it. So so obviously we're getting through to some people, which is really good. So again, you can get that on Amazon. You can get it through Kindle. And we're really excited for you guys to be looking at it. And Take a look and tell us what you think.
It's filled with great photos and examples for you. So it's kind of everything you need in one easy to access place. And as John just said, lots of great tips and tricks, lighting, audio, storytelling, editing, everything you need to kind of make your own little mini movie and make it look great. And, you know, just in the tips that you gave to your friend alone, he was able to shoot some amazing footage.
Yeah. It's the technology is fabulous, and then just a couple of good tips, and you'll be on your way. All right, let's check out the Undercover Jet Setter that we just created as far as Undercover Jet Setter Guacamole. Now, I think this is a staple for folks in summer months, and you're actually the one that came up with this recipe because you do this a lot.
Well, no, I absolutely agree about the summer months because most of those vegetables are seasonal then too, so they're really at their prime. But I think it was Rosa Mexicano that we were at in National Harbor where we kind of started to talk about this. And, you know, I kind of always took it for granted that, you know, coming from a climate and being in Southern California where great, flavorful vegetables and all the ingredients that you need to put into this exist right there. So I'm just always making it, and I've always made it this kind of fresh, chopped up, rustic way. And then we had it at Rosa Mexicana, and you were so inspired by it. Now you make it the same way too.
Yeah, actually, I don't use processed guacamole anymore. So I go out and make my own, and it's a lot of fun, and it's also, it's kind of eclectic. You don't have to do it the same way. Sometimes you can just kind of see what you have in your refrigerator and kind of throw it in and make it that way. And that's kind of the fun part about it. And the other thing is that, you know, we're not too far away from Cinco de Mayo, so this would be a great dish for you to take a look at. Take a look at the recipe that we have there, and the video there is on the nowtv.tikilive.com, so you can go take a look at it that way. But
absolutely.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and like we talk about in the video, you really don't have to go and get all the ingredients. I've actually made this in a pinch. If I just had ripe avocados and then you just pick up a pre-made pico de gallo, that's pretty much got everything in it. And then you just add some fresh lime, you know, some salt and your own kind of hot sauce, whatever you want to your taste. And it pretty much comes out great that way too. And, you know, you're just mashing things up. It's fresh and chunky and, you know, flavorful. And, you know, that's why it's the great go-to appetizer if you're running late and you have to stop at the store and all you have is 2 minutes, just get the avocados and the pico de gallo and you're good to go.
Yeah, and it's healthy for you. Avocados are loaded with oils that you need, and it's really worth it. It's worth it on so many levels. So get it fresh. Go look at the Undercover Jet Setter recipe and you'll love it. You know, we're talking about the show about navigating your world. And again, you know, we don't get into politics here. I do that on my other sites like informnotinflamed.com. You can go there. You can see some of my analysis on politics and the media. And for the most part, I teach you how to navigate the media and media bias so you don't get bogged down in the news. First, it's really not healthy for you to be watching a lot of news. And second, as bad as things might seem, there is plenty of hope and optimism out there for your success. And one of them is creating your own business. And that's what we're going to be doing. So we're not just food, wine, and travel here. We're going to get into business opportunities as well, because we come across a lot of them. And we're really beginning to see that this home-based craze is taking off again, right?
Oh, you're so right. And, I mean, that is a great analysis of the whole thing. The internet. I mean, it's crazy that we're still talking about the internet, but when it first came out, it has evolved so much, and all the possibilities that are still available with technologies like e-commerce, which is only growing and growing with the Amazon effect, that's really putting land-based businesses and brick and mortar stores out of business. There's so many options for people to actually have a home-based business and, you know, make money on the side or full time. And really, I think we're just going to see things growing more and more. You know, three sectors that we kind of talk about with technology right now that I think are really on the rise. E-commerce, like I just mentioned, online shopping is, you know, huge. Mobile app technology, that's only getting bigger and more ubiquitous if you think about it, because how much stuff do we do from our phones now that we used to do on the computer and now we're just doing it on our phone? Even if I'm at home, I'll do it from my phone rather than going to the computer. And the computer is right there, you know? And then the other one that I think is probably the least made aware by people is the blockchain. And blockchain technology, it's probably the least easy to understand, but it is a complete paradigm shift. And it's a technology where if you haven't heard much about it, it's all about digital assets, and digital assets can be transferred and transacted. So mostly it has been used for what is called cryptocurrency, or Bitcoin, as you might know it, money payments and transfers, but really any kind of data of value, contracts, records, information, that can all be transacted on the blockchain. So it's just in its beginning stages.
And we will talk about that a lot here. We'll delve into it. We'll bring on some guests and some experts. So just watch for that. And again, if you can't listen to the whole show, we'll break these up into segments so that there'll be specific segments on specific topics. So just continue watching that as we navigate the world for you. And it includes a lot of other things, certainly business opportunities. Let's discuss, because we haven't had a chance to discuss about the United Airlines fiasco, which was just horrible. I think it's due to a lot of competition, or lack of competition, I should say, in the airline industry and not enough investment in infrastructure. But I think it caused some good things, because that's not going to happen again. And second, Delta, in response, might offer up to $10,000 for passengers to give up seats. What are some of the suggestions? Because you and I talked about this. What are some of the suggestions we can offer folks so they don't get into a situation like that?
Well, and it's interesting, because I think you're absolutely right that that incident is going to change airline travel in the United States, just because mm-hmm. it went social, and that's the power of social media, like what we always talk about. And you've seen it, like Delta, there's been another American Airlines incident that they handled
the flight attendants
immediately.
Absolutely.
Exactly, and straight on it. American Airlines actually just took care of it immediately, handled it on social media, and I think we're going to see a big diversification in how the airlines have been treating passengers, which really the service and everything has gone down. So I'll talk about that in a second. But a couple of good tips for everybody when they travel. One of them, check in early. You and I always say that. It's always a good idea so that you have time to deal with any situation that does arise. You know, there's delays, mechanical, whatever it is. It's always good to just be there early, even if you have to sit around, but find a great restaurant or be part of one of the lounges. There's some great ones that I think we're eventually going to be doing a show on, airport lounges, for you.
Yeah.
But that is always a great place to just sit and chill out, you know, and you're at the airport, you just accept it and chill out, have a drink, enjoy it. The next one is join a mileage program. Now, the airlines really do recognize their elite members and the status. So you get lots of extra perks when you join a mileage program. It's upgrades to business or first class, free baggage. I mean, who doesn't love not having to pay for their baggage? And there's lots more. So it's a great step to take. Just begin. I would actually suggest joining all of the major airlines programs here in the United States. Try to stick to flying on just one, though. And that's how you can really start to earn the miles, and they start to add up, and you start to reach those different elite levels where you get all those perks. And maybe the most important thing, I think, which is just probably human nature, just when you're at the airport, everybody's going through something. Be patient, be polite, mm-hmm. be cooperative, yeah. be understanding. Safety is the first priority. So safety to get to the plane, then on board the plane. So the airport staff, the cabin crew, that's their first priority now. So always remember that. It really helps keep your frustration level down when you think, you know, delays, situations like that. They're thinking about safety. And always when traveling, I always like to suggest that everyone travel with an open mind and just travel with acceptance and respect. We're all different, and yet we're all the same. So we live in a great world. We just always want to keep it that way.
You know, and I needed those words before I was flying out to Vegas, because you and I had some work to do. I had one of the most annoying flights. First of all, I had an exit row because I am platinum. There were no first class, so I had an exit row. I had this guy sit next to me who seemed like he was 300 or 400 pounds and just sprawled all over me. I wanted to order food. Again, I wasn't first class, but I have an American Express deal where I can get food that is then reimbursed to me. So I asked the flight attendant for a chicken ginger wrap, and she throws me a ham and cheese sandwich. I was like, well, that's not what I wanted. They charged me for it, and, you know. Anyway, pain in the neck, and, you know, I just held my temper and, you know, kind of like what you're saying. But you know what's really interesting? Because you and I have traveled in Asia before. This doesn't happen there.
No, and I think it's what we talked about in the beginning. It's the competition, because overseas, for the most part, and sidebar here, obviously it makes a difference what airline you're flying on, always, because there are some super cheap, no-frills airlines in Asia and Europe too. But for the most part, airline travel is so organized and consistent, even when you're traveling in economy, you get a hot meal. You have the option of getting a beer or wine with your meal. It's all complimentary. Because the airlines are all in true competition with each other there. There's no monopoly. The prices are incredibly affordable. And I think I told you, I had booked a flight from Kuala Lumpur to Bangkok for $17 US. Yes. I mean, it was crazy. And then I went a little wild and I splurged and I added a seat upgrade for $3 more. So it's kind of, it's a different, again, a paradigm shift. But like we always suggest to people, if you're not afraid to have an adventure, fly a main airline to get to Asia or Europe, and then use the local airlines in the countries you're visiting, because you will save a ton of money and you'll have a great experience too.
All right. Well, still to come here on Navigating Your World, we're going to go to Vegas and take away some of the angst that I just gave you about my flight. And we're going to check out, we want you to also check out a number of shows of Undercutter Jet Setter that we've done there before on there. But we're going to talk to our good buddy, Eric Snyder, and that's when we come back.
So when I came home, I found Christine sitting on the floor beside the bed. It wasn't very good.
Norman Lloyd of Boca Raton saw his young, healthy wife go into unexplained heart failure. Her heart was at 200 beats per minute.
One cardiologist insisted that Christine needed a heart transplant. I was just floored. I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Instead of a transplant, doctors ordered a defibrillator, and things got worse.
They discovered a mass on the defibrillator lead that they installed in Christine's heart, and that was MRSA. And that she was in grave danger with that.
MRSA is a resistant bacteria that is deadly, so the defibrillator had to be removed. Weeks of complications ensued, but fortunately, Christine made it.
Christine had made it through. She had overcome congestive heart failure, pulmonary edema, and respiratory arrest, and 4 hospital-acquired simultaneous infections, including MRSA.
Fortunately, the Lloyds had Liberty HealthShare for their medical needs throughout the ordeal.
But they assured us that, you know, we just needed to concentrate on Christine. Don't worry about bills. Just, you know, take care of Christine and, you know, just work with the doctors and do whatever was necessary to get her home. Liberty HealthShare members covered every expense. We paid only our monthly membership amount and $1,500 unshared amount, and that was it. And I can't imagine where we would be without Liberty right now.
It was one less thing that I had to worry about, and it was definitely a peace of mind that we were able to get what I needed and tests that I needed and doctors and procedures, that it was just one less burden that I had to think about, and that was, I can't imagine what a relief that was.
See if Liberty HealthShare is right for you. Call 888-616-9443. That's 888-616-9443. Or go to healthshareradio.com. That's healthshareradio.com. Liberty HealthShare, changing healthcare for good.
And welcome back. We are both just back from Vegas. Actually, you're still in Vegas right now, and big things are happening there.
Well, let's bring in one of our great sources from Sin City, Eric Snyder.
So the Raiders are really coming to Vegas. This can't be taken back, correct?
No, it can't be taken back. There's too many behind-the-doors signed deals, and right now the Local 82, which is the union for construction, is going to create 3,000 jobs for Nevadans to build this thing. This thing is moving very rapidly, and Councilman Steve Sisolak said that shovels could be hitting dirt as early as October.
So this dirt, where are they going to be digging for this new stadium?
Well, there was two sites, Susan. There was one, Cashman Field, Cashman area where the 51s minor league baseball team plays, and a site that's going to be used, which is called Russell 62. There's 62 acres off of Russell Road and the 15. The 15 is the main highway that goes straight up the state and to Los Angeles, and kind of connects with the 215, so the two major highways in Las Vegas. A little bit south of the Mandalay Bay, there's a lot of land over there. It makes sense, and that's where they're going to start. That's where the shovels are going to start hitting that dirt. So it's exciting.
Now, how do you feel about this? Are you excited?
I have mixed feelings. I've been a Raiders season ticket holder for 28 years. I grew up with the Raiders. I'm a diehard junkie for the Raiders. I also understand, Susan, what the fan base and the passion is up in Oakland, and I think they got screwed. My concern is that Las Vegas is such a transient town. I've lived there for so many years. You both have lived here. That there's so many people I've met in my business that just don't like the Raiders. And how do you build that into a raucous fan base is, yes, maybe 20 years from now, the young kids that want to go to the game with their fathers, that's where you build a relationship with the football team. So I have mixed feelings on them leaving because I'm excited. It's like if you're a fan of Green Bay and they move into the town you live in, you're excited. I know this fan base, sir. I know how they don't support teams that lose. And the Raiders, let's face it, the Raiders had a very good year last year. But for 13 years before that, they had losing records. So I'm a little concerned.
Have you noticed any changes around Las Vegas since the announcement? Is there a different, either a different vibe? Are there different investments that are coming in? Is there anything new once this has been announced?
I've noticed in the media. I've noticed that in the Las Vegas Review-Journal in the sports section, it's everything Raiders. It's every byline is, what are the Raiders going to do in the draft? When the NFL schedule was released last Thursday, John, it was on the front page of the sports section. So subliminally, Las Vegas is getting through the media, and you have the local affiliates of CBS and Fox 5 affiliate sports anchors are up in Oakland with the start of the workouts and interviewing Derek Carr and Khalil Mack, some of the stars of the Raiders. I see it that way. And changes in Vegas is the fact that the economy is really coming around. You're seeing construction everywhere. And now people I know in the restaurant business are talking about getting some land and trying to open up something by Russell 62 with the new stadium proposal site.
Now, we've done a lot of stories in Las Vegas for the show, and everybody knows what a great entertainment town it is. All three of us have lived or are living in Vegas at some point, and we realize what a great place it is to live. Do you think people living here will notice a big change?
Yes. I think it's all positive. I'm like, the 3,000 workers from Nevada, full-time jobs, Susan, building this stadium. It's gonna relate to the commerce of this town. They're gonna be eating in the restaurants. They're gonna be shopping in the supermarkets, going to the movies here. So the fact that they're building anyways, and the economy has turned around. Having a football stadium, having a football team in your town, I think legitimizes it more from a commerce aspect. Look at the cities of Green Bay, Jacksonville, and Tampa, all small markets, and those football teams have added great revenue to their cities.
Cool. Well, can we talk about one of our favorite spots? It's called Montana Meat. Is that all right if we ask you about that? Because do you know anything about that?
Let me think about it. Okay.
Of course, you are the owner or part owner, manager, bartender. We've done a lot of food and drinks there. Anything new and special coming up as far as food and drink at Montana Meat?
Well, we're always expanding our menus, and we're doing things that sort of to placate more to the vegan and the vegetarian vendors that are out there. And we're also expanding our late night menu. We are open 24 hours, and you're finding now that more people are going out, believe it or not, between the hours of midnight and 8 a.m. And we have a full menu. You can now get steak and lobster at a Montana Meat Company at 3 in the morning, as well as getting it for in the dinner hour. So that's something. We're always trying something new. We've added some more Mexican dishes to our fajitas are off the hook, and believe it or not, in a steakhouse, our fajitas are good. And like I said, we're always expanding.
Now, any chance that you might be thinking about moving or opening another version of the restaurant near the new stadium?
Absolutely. Whether it's a fish concept, whether it's a Tex-Mex concept or another Montana Meat, we are actively in pursuit of a venue down there. And there's already been some movement on some. I won't mention any of my competitors, but I hear things all the time, and it's something that's very rapid and moving along. And like we said earlier in the conversation, it's gonna add to the expansion, and people will see more restaurants and more bars opening up. So definitely around the new stadium.
We had a couple of great cocktails when we were there last. Do you have any new stuff that you're doing cocktail-wise?
Well, our peach sangria and our orange and pineapple Long Islands are just, they are so popular, especially with the female clientele. And not only because it combines a wine and an alcohol and a juice, it's got a kick to it, and it's just very addicting. And actually, as the summer months are approaching, those fruity drinks are very, very popular.
Yeah, you made the best wine cooler I've had. In fact, I even stole in your recipe with the pineapple juice, the triple sec, and then the Chardonnay in it. Fabulous.
Yeah. That, well, you know what? And you, when you guys came out and tried that, I believe it was last summer, it's really taken off. And I was surprised that during the winter months that that we had the same kind of sales with those drinks. That, when, like I said, they're big during the summer, and people like to have cold drinks, and they like that, you know, that that fresh thing, the fresh fruit in there, and a little pineapple wheel, and all that stuff. So the garnishes make a lot about the drink, and it's a big success for us.
Yeah, that's kind of like a drink and a dessert in one. And I think John, you've stolen another one of his recipes. Don't you add Grand Gala to something because of what Eric's done?
I'm trying to think. The Grand Gala, I did that instead of the triple sec. So you're absolutely right. Because don't you use triple sec in that drink, Boychuk?
Well, you know, Susan, I heard something, a different version of that story. I heard that John actually added Manischewitz Concord grape because he's actually going back to his Jewish roots from World War II when he was, you know, an orphan. And the Concord grape actually gives it more of a kosher version of the drink, and I'm very proud that John could enlighten his Irish Jewish roots. But yeah, triple sec is usually used in what I use, but when John does something like that, I'm going to steal it from him and use it with my clientele.
Quote me on it and tell everybody I am a graduate of the Harvard Bartending School.
So it's safe to say that Tom Cruise and John Daly graduated from the Harvard School of Bartending. One got a job on Cocktail, and one got replaced by Ahmad Rashad on Real TV. I don't get this. You know what? There's some things in life that are so unfair. And the Grand Gala is great, John. I'm going back and I'm segueing. But another thing to put it in, you know, Grand Gala is basically a poor man's version of Grand Marnier. Grand Marnier is a great orange liqueur you could put in those drinks, and everyone's familiar with that.
All right, so give us the website for Montana Meat.
MontanaMeat.com.
And that was Eric Snyder in Las Vegas, a good longtime friend of mine, and he's become a good friend of yours here. You know what was really interesting that he also said to us a little bit there in the interview, and he said to us off camera, this is actually a bit of a risk for Las Vegas because the Raiders may only stay there for 5 years. So I think what they're hoping is that the fans are going to really come out and be good fans. And if not, well, they could go somewhere else. They might go back to Oakland. So how do you feel about that, being that you're, you know, actually almost a full-time resident?
Well, it's very funny because now that you've mentioned it, I thought it was fascinating that he told us that after. And what it means is, I think, Vegas fans, obviously, they want them to step up, and they're really kind of prodding them and poking them to do that, and they're kind of hanging this carrot threat over their heads that if you don't step up and support this team, you know, we're going to take them away again, which is a very interesting and probably smart strategy.
Yeah, it is, and at the same time, too, if you're from the town there, you feel like you're being jerked around. You know, a lot of people in Oakland and L.A. felt like they were jerked around, but the people in Oakland are great. They're rabid fans. But the people in L.A. aren't great fans. I mean, if you're not winning, they're not following you. So they're not as loyal.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think it was the same issue with the Rams leaving St. Louis, because St. Louis was a great fan base for the Rams. Now they're in Los Angeles. We'll see what happens there, you know. And you had always kind of said, you know, obviously we know Los Angeles is a bit topsy-turvy and changes their mind every other minute about restaurants and buildings and architecture. But Las Vegas, too, you're the one that told me that the fans here are kind of, you know, they're you know, picking and choosing, and if it's winning, they're there, and if they're not, then they're not there.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in Vegas as the NFL moves into town and gets into town, and of course we'll be doing more on that as it happens, since you'll have a bird's eye view of that as well. Let's take a break now. We're going to take you to China with someone who's just come back from there. That's when we come back.
I felt a terrible pain. I said, Raymond, help me, I'm dying.
My friend Donatalia Ferry from Las Vegas wasn't kidding. She was close to death.
Once they finally took the CAT scan, they realized that there was fluid on or surrounding her heart. They didn't know where it was coming from, but her blood pressure dropped to 66 over 44.
Her husband Raymond says the news became more bleak as Donna was prepped for surgery.
The surgeon showed up and gave us very dark details. She'll die without the operation, and she has a 50-50% chance of dying on the operating table or even less. This operation was more dangerous than a complete heart transplant. It was a torn aorta right above her heart where the valve is.
But Donna survived thanks to the great work by the doctors, and she is now recovering.
Coming out of the operating room, she was warm and had color, and the doctor told us the heart was strong, there was no damage. And
Donna and her family also survived financially because Donna is a member of Liberty HealthShare.
My care was phenomenal, and I've had no problem with my HealthShare, and I don't expect to. But I can tell you that I'm going to do everything I can to spread the word so that other people can have the same benefits and blessings that I've had from this.
And I am so glad I got Donna to join. It has worked for me, too. Liberty HealthShare is medical cost sharing. Members share each other's bills to keep costs down while also making sure catastrophic costs don't harm you either. Now, for more information, go to healthshareradio.com, or you can call this number, 888-616-9443. That's 888-616-9443. Liberty HealthShare, changing healthcare for good.
And welcome back. Let's give you a glimpse into China today. Our good friend and colleague Dale Bellis, the executive director of Liberty HealthShare, recently won a trip to Hong Kong.
Yes, he did. And we talked to him about Hong Kong in our last show, but he also talked about his observations with China.
As you indicated, we added to that Hong Kong experience by taking our own trip into mainland China. If I were called of God to go to China as a missionary, I'd show up tomorrow, but I wouldn't necessarily return there as a tourist. I experienced it, loved the fact we went to mainland China, but it is so culturally different and distinct from everything we experience here in the West. It produced with me, and I'll just be honest with you, a bit of unease. After being there for 2.5 weeks, I was having this internal disruption, realizing that everything around us was so culturally different that I was kind of experiencing a little bit of culture shock.
So was it more, was it the culture? Was it the politics? Was it just you not, you're just so used to being an American? Was that the big thing maybe?
Well, number one, there are different cultural experiences in China in terms of even your interaction with other individuals. We have a sense here in the West of certain spatial differences.
Mm-hmm.
That is, when I talk to you, Susan, I maintain a distance of about 2 or 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case in China. When they communicate with you, they invade that personal space that we kind of expect, and it's a little disconcerting, frankly. The second thing is they don't know a thing at all about standing in line for a queue. Whenever they go to a public event, they open the doors. It's a stampede as to who gets in there first. They'll elbow past you, whether you've been standing there for 2 hours in line, patiently waiting for the doors to open or not. I found that just a fascinating cultural difference. And then third, of course, is the food. The food in China is everything unlike what we experience here in terms of Westernized Chinese food. My wife loves Chinese food here in the U.S. The food in China was totally different.
Totally different how?
We have the kind of the wok experience mm-hmm. here in WOK.
Yep.
Kind of our woked sort of Chinese food. Over there, it's just cooked different. It's chopped up differently. It's not sweet and sour pork or chicken. It's just prepared differently.
Different spices.
Different spices, different appearance, different textures. And they're very heavy on dumplings, as you well know. And it's not pot stickers. It's the what they put inside those dumplings and then steam them is just different from what we would ordinarily experience. And so we found that to be a bit of a cultural change.
Now, is it easy or hard to communicate with the people?
Well, I found the Chinese people very accommodating, very friendly, wanting to be very helpful. And if we needed directions to a particular site or, you know, we reached out to them individually, they were very gracious and kind and hospitable people. And so we found that very easy.
Do they seem to take the government's line on history? Because I think you had some tour guides over there, right?
We did. And in fact, we were bold enough to ask the Chinese, I didn't, my wife did, the Chinese guide as to some of the historical information about China and its founding and the Cultural Revolution and Mao Zedong, et cetera. And he was very direct, surprised me, that this is the information we've had from the Chinese government. We're blocked from being able to even research it on Google because we don't have Google in China. And so this is what we've been told. It may be different than this, but this is what we've been told, and that's all I can tell you. He was very open about that, straightforward and transparent, but it was evident to me as a part of the control of the Red Chinese government over its people, monitoring the information that they receive.
Did you walk away feeling that China is friend or foe?
I came away, the people are very, very friendly. There's an awareness that there is a layer of governmental control that's evident particularly in mainland China. But the people themselves are incredibly open, gracious, and supportive of Westerners. What also surprised me, John, is both the economy, the technology that people access every day. There's a layer of entrepreneurialism, free enterprise in China that I didn't anticipate and expect, all the way from the taxi cab drivers to the street vendors, to the hotel operators, etc. They are developing businesses that generate income that's underneath the layer of Red Chinese government control. As relates to healthcare, I was surprised. Their healthcare arrangements very similar to our Medicare arrangement, mm-hmm. which may give us pause. I don't know, but they pay a monthly amount in order to access that healthcare arrangement in China. It's just simply not provided to them free of charge. They're having to pay a monthly premium for that government provided healthcare, and the sense of customer satisfaction was interesting to me. The response that we received on the healthcare side was that it's okay for catastrophes. It's not so good when it comes to trying to deal with everyday health concerns. And they turned to their local practitioners and their Chinese folk medicine and other means for meeting healthcare needs. That's traditional with Chinese. In fact, both my wife and I kind of experienced the Ming Dynasty revenge while we were there, and we accessed some of that secret Chinese medicine
herbal
sorts of treatments. They worked wonderfully well. I'd recommend them.
So, did you feel comfortable over there if you thought you might get sick or something might have happened to you? I mean, for a lot of people who are going over there, it's a totally different system. If you're in Hong Kong, probably a different feeling. Did you feel anything one way or another?
I had no anxiety about that felt like if something did transpire or occur, we'd have resources there to turn to. And in fact, just the over-the-counter remedies that we accessed worked wonderfully well. And our interactions with our English-speaking guides was really spectacular. and talked about religious freedom in China, and discovered from those that we spoke to that they felt very free to exercise their personal faith, which I was grateful for, and that at least at that level of communication, they were not worried about any kind of interference in their everyday life in terms of expressing their faith and being able to worship. Although we do hear from time to time, as we all know, in the news of there seems to be surges of that when the red Chinese government tamps it down and interferes. Yeah. But at least at the level of our discussion with as many people as we could talk to, I was grateful to see a degree of ability to exercise both religious freedom as well as economic freedom that was really fascinating to me. I didn't expect it.
What were the three cities you visited again?
Beijing, which is, of course, the capital, 23 million people. We went to an ancient capital there where there's a lot of excavation, but it was where the dynasties held their capital, which was Xi'an. And then we went on to probably the most economically prosperous city of all, and a shipping port, which was Shanghai. And so we experienced those three cities. Shanghai, by the way, is 30 million people. A part of that culture and feeling of difference just has to do with the quantity of people that occupy the space that you're in. And we here in the West don't have that same kind of experience. But, you know, when you're living in a city of 30 million people, larger than many of our actual states, you know, it's really a fascinating experience to see it.
What about the Great Wall?
That was probably the highlight of our entire trip. That and the what's referred to as the Terracotta Soldiers in Xi'an. But the Great Wall of China, it was very instructive to me that it took several generations to repair it and build it. Whenever they started building the wall to prevent the hordes of Mongols invading their country, they did it with slave labor to start. And then figured out that it would be best if they hired the help to get it done. And so they started paying wages, and the building of the Great Wall proceeded dramatically faster than what they were able to use through slave labor. But here was the other interesting observation. As fascinating and as complex as the building of the wall was and is, and to walk on it with that kind of history was really a great high point, the Mongols still invaded.
Right. Yeah.
And China was under the control of the Mongols for about 500 years. So even though they had the wall in place, the Mongols still invaded. So I'm not sure what that portends for us in our modern day in terms of our discussion about building walls. Whether somebody else is paying for it or not.
Right.
Or if they put doors in the walls.
Yeah, it's kind of instructive, I think.
Wow. How about the smog? Was the smog a problem for you?
It was terrible. It was awful in Beijing. And interestingly, in Shanghai, it was not the case. But it was very, very heavy. And the Chinese folks themselves wear the masks in the smog-ridden city of Beijing. It was very, very heavy there. Not the case, though, in some of the other cities.
And you felt it too, Susan, when you were there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It burns your eyes, you know. So even if you have a scarf or anything over your face to help you breathe, it still burns your eyes.
Sure. Okay, yeah. Good.
But maybe in Shanghai, it blows it out to sea.
It could.
That could be
I'm not
the case
sure
there.
Just exactly why it was not an issue there, but it certainly was in Beijing.
So now, number one tip for people from the U.S. going to China.
My number one tip is to just be an observer of all things Chinese. Just try to absorb everything that is there and experience it without judgment. Just accept it and see it and observe it. I was just fascinated by all of the differences in culture, the experience, the history, My tip is to just be open to all of the potential experience and change that you would come across in China, because it is such a distinct and different culture from our own.
Were there any customs or, for instance, in certain cultures, you don't shake hands or you don't touch somebody? Was there anything like that you had to try to think about or observe, or are they pretty much on the same page with
us? They're pretty much in the same way. They behave toward us Westerners as they would expect a Westerner would behave. So shaking hands and greeting was no difficulty. But again, the biggest cultural difference that I observed was that spatial difference. That when they communicate with you, they're up real close. And I have to just admit, it was a little uncomfortable at times because we here in the West love our space. And when you're scrunched together with 30 million folks, it changes that immensely.
Well, yeah. We're glad you survived it and glad you got over there, Dale.
Yeah, well, it was a pleasure to do. An experience, and I would recommend for Americans to visit China, Hong Kong, and mainland China, and just go there as a friend, because I think that's the way we impact the world around us.
And again, that was Dale Bellis.
Make sure to check us out at undercoverjetsetter.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Undercover Jetsetter, and on Twitter is a little different. It's UC Foodie TV.
And go to those sites and let us know what you want on the show. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you, John, and cheers, everyone.
We'll catch you next time.
For more on John Daly, go to jetsetterdeals.com.